Okay, so here we are for a Burning Platform live edition. I'm sorry that we're a little bit late. Pumi and I were sitting and we couldn't see each other on the link because we were waiting for Jack to connect us, but we're all on now and ready to take you through what I think is going to be a fascinating morning. We're going to be joined in a short while by none other than Moeli Mbele.
You see, I see the people in the comments saying this, 7 o'clock. I agree, guys. The starting at 7 and just straight up into the road dogging the content. It's hard. It is easier to get up at 4.
Yeah, and also the traffic and all that stuff, but we've got to get cracking. So today we've got none other than the terrific Moeli Mbeki. And this guy has been talking sense for so long that I'm surprised there isn't a person in the world who doesn't just ask him every time anything happens, because he's got the answers. He's predicted a ton of things that have come to fruition with almost
speaking of predictions. I come in this morning humbled, because now that the results are out, I could not have conceived a 17% loss for the ASC. Couldn't have conceived it, but right. Here we are.
Well, I see Super Jacob Zuma in the comments saying, Dinchang Shani. So Shani was up very early this morning, but Super Jacob Zuma being back in the comments is a whole different story, because he hasn't experienced since, I don't know, about 8 years ago. So
another Zuma making a comeback.
Right. So we've got to talk about the election results. We've got to talk a little bit about coalitions. I had this discussion with Jack just yesterday. It seems to me everybody is now an expert on X about coalitions. Everyone seems to know what it means to form a minority government. Everybody knows who the ANC should ally with or who the other party should ally with.
But you know this. You know this about us. This week, this is what we're doing this week. This week, we're coalition experts. Yep. And I'm so excited to have Moeli on, because as we spoke the other day, I'm not sure why we are so enamored with the idea of coalitions when we started this country with a government of national unity. So I'm very interested and keen to hear his view. He was there, and maybe he can just remind us about why that then and why this now.
So a couple of takeaways. Just off the bat, I think obviously the biggest surprise here is MK, and particularly the result in KZN. Extremely well done to them. Clearly the people, and if you take the numbers and you work out the pluses and the minus here, what effectively happened is the ANC, who've slid all the way to third place in KZN, who would have guessed it. All those supporters who were voting ANC are now voting MK. It's almost like a direct transition. It's not as if the IFP lost voters to the ANC, to MK. It's not as if the DA did. They all came from the ANC. So that's an obvious first.
And the EFF? I mean, the EFF is sitting at 2% in KZN.
Yeah. No, in KZN, they got drubbed. There's no doubt. But I think the EFF, you predicted this correctly, even if you didn't get the ANC getting below 50% correctly, you did predict that the EFF were they'd hit their peak and they were on their way down. And I think that's true. I don't think any hope for them to recover after this. They're going to be a party that gets smaller and smaller as the years go by.
You know, with everything, and we've talked about polls, we talked about internal polling, we talked about all of those leading up to the election. The one thing that held up is the trends that we saw in the by-elections. Because I saw it in the by-elections. I saw it in the by-elections that the EFF was going down, particularly in KZN. I saw it in the by-elections that MK was going to do well. I did not think it was going to do that well. But we knew it was going to do well. And we knew that it was taking... It was taking members. It was taking voters from everywhere. I mean, the NFP is also, taken a serious hit in KZN. And when we look at, who else got something right is we had Mkhuleko Hlengwa on the show, and he said to us that the IFP is a growing party, and we were like, really? And here they are. They've gone from 14 to 17 seats in the next administration. I'm just, wow. Some big move. So he was right. He was right. Their party has grown. Their party has grown in KZN. They're number two in KZN again. And I'm just, wow. That's all I have to say about the result. I could never, I couldn't actually conceive. 17% loss is incredible. And so it is in the hands of Cyril Ramaphosa that ANC is dying.
We will have to see what happens. I noticed the parties have gone very quiet. A lot of conversations happening behind closed doors. The ones who are clearly not being spoken to, no one's talking to, and they're not making any noise. Well, they're making the most noise at the moment. But we'll see what happens because, you know, everybody's throwing around this term kingmaker like they know what the answer is going to be. But at this point, it's anyone's guess.
I think that the two things that we're also watching play out is we're watching Jacob Zuma and the chaos that he loves. This is it, right? He won. He is the biggest winner in this election. But he's so, like, in his head, the chaos is so much more important. He's not, first they want a recount, now they want a re-election. No, they're not showing up to parliament. All of those things. I'm like, why doesn't this guy know how to win? He's won, and he doesn't know how to take the win.
He's also definitely calling into question the free and fair elections and saying that they were rigged or that they were stolen and they need to do a recount.
Imagine rigging your way. Imagine rigging your way to a 17% loss. Imagine rigging your way to a 1% win. Like, the hell? No, really?
It's ridiculous.
Who's rigging this for what purpose?
I mean, so, they're the winners, as you said. So if anything was rigged, it was rigged in their favor. Overall, 14% nationally is not bad, though, for MK. But the other stories, and probably a bigger story than that even, is the ANC's dropping to 40%. I mean, people were saying this, including Franz Grenier, who we had on right in the beginning, and the Social Research Foundation, and everybody said, no, it's going to be impossible, including me. And it turns out, like, Franz can come back and give us all a big, fat, I told you so.
We tried to get him on here. We tried. He was unavailable for us today, but maybe next week. We'll see.
Very good. Okay, so let's talk to the man. We don't want to waste any of his time. Mweledzi Mbeki is on the line. We're going to speak to him. It'll be terrific to have his insights. Very early and very cold Thursday morning. Good morning to you, Mr. Mbeki. Very nice to see you. How are you, sir?
Good to see you, both of you. Also very cold, but that time of the year.
So you also get to be one of those people because you've been telling us for 10 years maybe that the ANC is heading towards a hiding, and it didn't make you very popular within certain circles. You've been saying this is inevitable. You've been telling us about these changes. I remember because I've listened to you very, very carefully, and you've been right on a number of things. I think it's very childish, but I would love you to have a na-na-na-na-na, I told you so. We love having people on here who say the things that nobody else wants to say them bravely, even if they're unpopular, and then they end up coming true. So I'm just thrilled that we get to talk to you post all of your predictions. Whether you liked it or not, this is what you foresaw happening based on trends within the ANC, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, I was hammered by Gwede Mantashe a few years ago when I said that the ANC is not the future of South Africa. I was speaking at a Cape press conference, I think it was in 2011, and Gwede Mantashe those days, he was Secretary General of the ANC, and I had pointed out that South Africa has many of the symptoms that led to the Arab Spring in North Africa, and that this is coming to South Africa. Well, I got hammered by the ANC, especially by Gwede Mantashe, but
here we are.
the voters now agree with me that the ANC is not the future of South Africa.
Well, I think one of the things that we've been talking a lot about, and we see everybody talking about it, and probably the conversation was started by the DA when they formed what was initially called the Moonshot Pact, was this idea of coalitions. But I'm wondering, why are we so enamored by the idea of coalitions when we could just have a government of national unity, or we can simply just have a government of all of these parties working together and reaching out across the aisle to each other to pass laws as and when they need it? This is what the people are saying. The people are saying, get over yourselves and work together to make the country work. Why are we so enamored with coalitions, do you think?
I honestly don't know is the simple answer to it. Mm. My suspicion, but this is purely guesswork, is that there are people, especially white folks in the country, who think that the DA will never be in government. So this is a way of campaigning for the DA to be included by the black parties. That is my... The person who actually popularized this coalition, age of coalition, was the late Alistair Sparks. He died several years ago. But he is the person who popularized the notion that this is the age of coalitions.
Well, because obviously, like everyone else, I've now gone down a super rabbit hole about what it takes to pass laws, what it takes for the business of government to continue, what the National Assembly must be constituted like, about quorums and all of that stuff. And have been deeply fascinated to see that we can have a working government with a desperate number, 18 now, of different parties who all sit in different places on the political spectrum, but can learn to work together.
No, you are absolutely right. You know, because the Constitution does not say that the president should come from a party with 51%.
The majority.
Yeah, it just says majority. It just says the majority. It doesn't even say party. It just says the majority of members of parliament present must elect the president.
And I think this is getting to the place, and Gareth and I spoke about this on Tuesday. Who then, of the various people, and the list has now been given over to the Chief Justice of the members of parliament from the various parties as per the seats that they won in the election. Do we, though, have the kind of leaders in any of these parties that is charismatic enough, that is grown up enough, that could hold together a government of all of these different parties and drive an agenda for the country? Do we have that person?
I think we have lots of people in those parties, the little parties, the bigger parties. We have people who can come together and elect a president. Obviously, candidate number one would be the present president, Mr. Ramaphosa. And then after that, I think they have to negotiate every step of the way, whatever action the government wants to take. So the president or the executive has to take. So I think all it does, a formula like that, will mean that for a change, our ministers will have to get off their seats and start being active and start working. That's all it requires, so that whenever they have a law to pass, they go around and see other members of parliament, lobby them and get them to agree, and then the law gets passed. So there's no need for this hysteria about coalition. There's absolutely no need for it.
You know what it reminds me of? It's like when kids have like little girls have dolls, and then they try to put the dolls into marriages, and then this doll doesn't want to be with that one, and you know, it's almost like kids playing with their toys. No, I mean, this is the kind of the puerile stuff that I'm seeing on social media at the moment, where you've got a whole lot of people who are, you know, experts for 2 weeks, and they are now, they're actually just fantasizing. That's what they're really doing, is they're fantasizing about what kind of a government they would like, or if they're a depressed sort of person, a negative sort of person, what the worst possible outcome could be. You know, Pumi and I did a show the other day, and the first thing she said, which I thought was so good, is she said, look, we're still here. Do you remember, Mweletsi and Pumi, how many people were going on about, oh, the ANC will never relinquish power peacefully, South Africa is going to go down the tubes, whatever happens in this election, if it doesn't go this one tiny route, then all the other routes are chaos and destruction. And clearly that's not the case. The only chaos and destruction that we have seen this week is that horrible tornado in KZN. But the politicians, for the most part, have been reasonably well behaved. And I've got to say, the ANC has been extremely well behaved and quite gracious in and magnanimous in their defeat, because it is nothing short of a defeat.
Oh yeah, you say, I think there is a section of our compatriots who love worst case scenarios. So they revel in a worst case scenario about the country. And they predict this worst case scenario, and they paint all sorts of circumstances that will lead to this worst case scenario, and I guess we just have to learn to live with those people, and the social media, of course, has multiplied the platform from which the pessimists love to revel in, and so that's just the way it is. There's nothing much we can do. The rest of us who think that the country is not on the edge of a catastrophe, there's nothing we can do with it. I must say the DA is fueling this mindset with its notion of doomsday scenario. If the ANC and the EFF work together. You know, the ANC, the EFF wants to nationalize the banks. The ANC has a program called the Freedom Charter, which was adopted in 1955. That program, and the ANC hasn't repudiated it, it also says it must nationalize the banks. So, but the ANC hasn't done it. It's been in power 30 years. So why does the DA go around whipping this hysteria in the country that there is a doomsday scenario that the EFF will bring about?
It's also funny to see that those same people who are terrified the EFF will nationalize the banks, they seem to be okay with saying, oh, the EFF couldn't even build the school they promised to build 8 years ago, but they suddenly believe that they'll nationalize the banks. Like, that's going to happen.
You know what's worrying, though, about fueling an idea that a MK, EFF, whatever, working together, from the DA's perspective, means or spells doomsday, because the corollary of that is that they are saying, without our supervision, a 21% party, these other ones cannot be left alone to govern. And that is negating the will of the people. That is actually negating the will of the people. The people have spoken in terms of their ballots for what it is. And for them to then say, oh, you know, any kind of coalition that doesn't have us in it is going to be doomsday for this country, is negating the will of the people. And I think that's one of the reasons why the DA fails to reach out to a bigger audience of voters, because they have the, and when Gaetan McKenzie said they were arrogant, you know, everyone was like, became arrogant. But that's what they're saying. That's the idea they are communicating to the rest of us. And so people look at them with the side eye, you know?
No, absolutely, you're right there. Remember, just when the election was announced, the DA wrote a letter to the American Secretary of State saying, come and help us supervise the election in South Africa. and they wrote, I don't know who else, the Prime Minister of England. In the meantime, the English threw out their Prime Minister. They're throwing out their Prime Minister. Anyway, the DA writes to all these Western people saying, oh, there's going to be a catastrophe in South Africa. Come and supervise the elections. Anyway, the election was held with the IEC. There's been no catastrophe. The ANC was defeated. It accepted defeat. It's looking for a formula to form a government that's agreed to by the country and the other party. No catastrophe that
the
DA has been predicted. So I hope some advisor to the DA can go and try and calm them down and point out that the heavens are not about to fall on South Africa.
Well, is it true, Pumi, that and Moleti, that before this, not so many years ago, the ANC was close to 66. They were even more than 66%.
No, they were at 69.
And things didn't fall apart, you know, so you put MK, EFF, and ANC together, you still don't reach the kind of number that the ANC had on its own once, and the country didn't fall apart. So we've got to get past this. The other thing that keeps coming up on social media, and I promise you we don't use that as a barometer of what really happens in the world. I see lots in the comments about the same thing. But people also saying, you know, almost appealing to a higher power, well, international business and foreign investors. But there's this bizarre conversation happening where you've got people who are disconnected from reality on both ends. You've got people who believe that we're being bullied and dictated to by the markets. And they're the same people who say the markets are skittish and that the markets are in limbo all the time, which, you know, these are cognitively dissonant things. They can't both be true. Either the markets are strong and powerful and tell countries what to do, or they're always terrified and shivering in the corner waiting to see if there's stability or not. Both can't be true at the same time. And then you've got people on the other side who say, well, the markets are extraordinarily important, and if the markets dictate X, Y, and Z, then it's definitely true. And neither of these groups seem to be attached to the political realities of South Africa. And that is that for the average South African, it's really about survival. It's got very little to do with the international markets. Am I right?
Oh, you're absolutely right. And this issue of the markets panicking and all sorts of things, you know, it's designed to whip the rest of the country into line with this group that wants to pull strings. Let me put it this way: they want to pull strings behind the scenes to dictate the policies of the government of the day. The reality about the government of the day in South Africa is that it's elected by voters in South Africa, and they elected it for its manifesto. Many people think that voters don't read manifestos. I think it's not true. Anyway, the media tells them what the manifestos say. You don't have to read some of the very boring stuff that you see in manifestos. The media summarizes that for you, so the people know what the manifestos of the political parties are. So yes, you know, we have this group, I guess it's we call it a faction in our public opinion, which doesn't believe in democracy really, because they want this dictator called the market to formulate policy of the South African government instead of the voters. We have to try and educate our pessimists to try and show them that, you know, they have to believe in their fellow citizens who vote in the main parties in South Africa.
So I just want to go to comment here from Moonchild, who says that she thinks that we're ridiculing the DA. I mean, all parties, believe me, by the end of this show, all parties will come in for some criticism. So just calm down, Moonchild. But she says, if it wasn't for them, things may very well have fallen apart if the radical EFF and MK coalesce with the corrupt ANC. Disappointing. Okay, so look, I mean, let's talk about what is possible here, because this is where you're amazing, Mueletsi, is that you are able to cast an eye into the future and not to predict, but to help us kind of walk in a steady and purposeful direction here. If you were advising the ANC at the moment, and this also, Pumi, is something I'd ask you, if you were advising them at the moment, would you say to them, listen, guys, go in, minority government, just make friends ad hoc as and when you need to pass laws. Choose one or two people from the other parties if you like to show that you're generous of spirit and have one or two of them in the cabinet. But otherwise, just business as usual. There are checks and balances now, thanks to the will of the people from the DA, from MK, from the EFF, and from other parties. And just proceed on that basis. Or would you say to them, go and make a formal coalition and see how long you can keep it together?
No, I would go with the former. I would go, you know, go and see, talk to the other parties, get agreement about who you are going to put up as president. I don't think there are many people in the country who are against Cyril Ramaphosa as president from the ANC, and hear what they think, and get into some agreement with them to put in their votes to get a majority to elect the ANC president, and then proceed with life. So this whole thing that we need governments of national unity, you know, you need governments of national unity when you have a real crisis in a country. South Africa does not have a crisis. The fact that the ANC loses this majority doesn't constitute a crisis for South Africa. It's a normal democratic process. And under our constitution, it should go around, talk to other parties, and get them to agree to elect a president and put, and if they have another candidate, fine. Those who don't agree to participate, let Cyril Ramaphosa, let somebody else stand against him, and then, but that's how democracy works.
This, I was, you know, so after the shock of the way that the result came out, and particularly how much Jacob Zuma was able to convince people to come over to his side, what I thought about was, we are now at a place where our democracy is maturing. A country like South Africa that has so many different stakeholders, as it were. We have so many different types of people who feel and believe in completely different things, and different parts of various policies appeal to them. This is where we are. We are now at a place where our government can also mature, hopefully, where our government can get to a place where every single one, and you put it so well, Mr. Mbeki, to say that they must get off their backsides and do some work. You know, I'd like to see Pemi Majodina walking from party to party to whip votes, to get them to sign off whatever policies that they believe in. I would love to see more EFF people sitting in the... being there in parliament when things are being debated and not just causing chaos, but actually putting forward real reasons for why they believe these policies are wrong or right. And then getting people to vote with them. That's where we are supposed to be going. That's where I'd like to see us going next.
Yeah. Well, from your mouth to God's ears, Pumi, that's all I can say.
You know, and I think one of the things that, just talking about policy and markets and who's controlling what, the puppet masters, as it were, and because we do have a political and economic analyst, I would very much love to hear your view, Mr. Mbeki, on how we fund political parties in this country, because one of the big conversations that kind of was outsized really going into the elections is who is paying for whose campaign and why. You know, so some of those things I think are also an important part that we need to kind of ventilate.
Well, you know, one of the things that surprised me was when the ANC passed a law saying it must reveal who is funding it. So, I thought, are these guys sleeping or what? Why
They're
do they
not
want to
thinking.
reveal who is funding them? Well, I still haven't got an answer to that question. But I think what that showed us is that we actually don't have serious, at least on the ANC side, we don't have serious members of parliament. Because how do you pass a law that shoots yourself on the foot? Irrespective of the morality of who funds who, the point, why shoot yourself on the foot? And then you start to look for loopholes in the same law that you yourself passed. So that's why I was saying that, you know, these members of parliament of the ANC, they've all been sitting on their backsides doing nothing. They were probably fast asleep when somebody slipped through this law, which they then signed. Their president signed it to law. It is so bizarre. It is so bizarre. So, you know, the question of who funds political parties, I don't know if there is a magic wand to it. The reality is that we have a class of wealthy, very wealthy people in South Africa. We have another class of very poor people in South Africa. What that means is that the very poor, they may be members of political parties, but they can't afford to put up the money to fund those parties. So the very wealthy have to fund the political parties. You can dress this formula with whichever way you like, but that's the reality of our situation.
And do you think, Gareth, you go?
No, I don't think that the people who are saying that the markets would like to see a more friendly, less left-wing kind of bias in our parliament, particularly if there were a coalition, I don't think those people are necessarily wrong. And certainly, I think for international investors to be able to come into South Africa, for businesses to be started, for currency to be unlocked in places where it's been stagnant for a long time, it would be useful to have a government that was moving, at least forward, in a direction that was free market oriented. I think that's true. I don't think those markets are dictating to us, like a lot of conspiracy theorists online are saying. But I do think that that is a way to prosperity. And without economic growth, we are in a very, very ugly situation. Doesn't matter who's in charge. I mean, you'd agree with that, right?
You said instead of us debating what the correct policies are, we then go and look for this so-called market and say it is saying to us what people should come up and say these are the correct policies that the country needs. I have been saying to the ANC government, I'm against black economic empowerment. These are the reasons why I'm against it. This is the damage that it is doing to the economy. I don't go and look for the market to come and buttress my argument. Of course, the ANC doesn't listen to me, but it doesn't stop me from saying so. So we as South Africans have to focus on our own discussions and stop thinking that there's some higher power, whether it's the United States or the United Kingdom or the European Union or China or Russia, who is going to solve our problem. We have to learn to solve our problems and for all of us to contribute solutions, not cliches, not threats from outsiders.
You know, and just talking about we as South Africans need to figure these things out for ourselves, what works for us, what works for our market. One of the conversations that the first time I saw it was with Dr. Panelo Hotla saying we should postpone the elections and we need to have a debate or a dialogue as South Africans to think about who we are and where we are and where we're going. And now, even during his campaigning, former President Mbeki has also been talking about the fact that South Africans need to have a national dialogue of figuring out who we are and what we want of our country and how we're going to make it happen. What is your view on this idea of a national dialogue, kind of figuring out what we want?
Well, you know, as Winston Churchill once said, it's always much better to talk than to fight.
Yes.
So on
George
that
Orwell,
principle,
war, yeah.
let's have a national dialogue and talk until the cows come home, as they say. So I don't think there's any harm done in having the dialogue. However, the biggest dialogue we have just had this, which is the election campaigns. We had 6 weeks, if I'm not mistaken, of a huge national dialogue. And the political parties, I don't know how many of them, 300 of them, put ideas on the table, and the people of South Africa voted on those ideas, and we know what the outcome was of that of those ideas. So I don't know if we want to carry on. Of course, if we want to carry on talking, there's no harm in carrying on talking. But someday, somewhere along the line, we have to get back to work and start producing. We can't talk forever.
This is
Well,
one of my deepest disappointments. One of my deepest disappointments, going into the election, and now, as there's all of this wrangling, as it were, for power and seats, is we're not having conversations about the biggest problem we face in this country, which is unemployment. There's not enough talk about how we solve our unemployment crisis, which I think is just a powder keg. It is waiting to explode, and this has been my deepest disappointment.
yeah, absolutely. You see, but I personally have put forward a proposal about how we address unemployment. The proposal I put on the public platforms is that we have to reduce the huge amount of money we spend on this public service and on the politicians. You know,
Yes.
when a member of parliament walks into the door of parliament and sits down and falls asleep, they earn 1.2 million rands. Just walking into that door, they say nothing, they don't vote, they are just sitting there. They are paid 1.2 million rands. Now, why? But what is the consequence of doing that? Is that we are taking money from our businesses, and instead of investing that money, we're giving it to this guy who's sitting in parliament and falling asleep. If we gave him half the money and then invested the money in creating jobs, in repairing the railways so that our exports and imports can move efficiently, then we'll be addressing the unemployment problem. So if you look at there's been studies about our public sector salaries, is the highest paid in the world, the public sector of South Africa. As a percentage of gross domestic product, our public sector, according to this study, is about 14% of GDP. Countries
Shoo.
that are like South Africa are only 5% of GDP goes to the salaries of the public sector. Countries like Chile and South America, Indonesia and Asia, it's only 5 or 6%. Us, it's 14% of GDP. Now, look at it this way. If we cut the salary to 5% of GDP, so we'll have nearly 10% of our GDP going to investment to repair the railways, to sort out the potholes, to create jobs.
I'm so pleased that that is in your proposal, and I'm pleased that there is at least somebody in South Africa who's looking at that side of the balance sheet, because our costs are just going up and up and up, and civil servants get automatic increases because, of course, the government's in bed with COSATU up to now. That's all going to have to change because it's not going to be so easy for them to just strong arm their desires into into future labor relations situations within the bureaucracy. But the other side of the balance sheet is economic growth. And Pumi went there, even if she didn't agree with me earlier in the show about this. Eventually, we got there because unemployment is undoubtedly something I think everybody in this country agrees is the biggest problem. But we have to grow the cake as well. It's not just how we spend what we've already got. We have to grow that cake. And we can take lessons from other countries all over the world that have done the right thing. I mean, you see it happening now in Argentina, where they've reversed years and years of economic decline and state control of the economy. And we've got to start freeing up ours. And if we do that and we grow our economy and we allow cash to flow in and out, I think it'll be much easier for businesses to operate. We relax some of the laws which have made it very difficult. There's so much red tape. Pumi, you know, you're a small business owner like me. If we relax some of that red tape, we will free up a whole lot more money, which will then come into the fiscus, and that will give us more to spend on things like the railways, helping people with housing, electricity that we haven't been able to provide over the last few years consistently. All of that will improve, surely. So economic growth should be at the top of our agenda, because downstream from economic growth, you solve the unemployment problem.
Yes, and you know, the government, the present one anyway, instead of doing all the things that we are discussing, they are saying, oh no, let's, instead of getting the poor people to be employed, repairing the railways, building new schools, repairing existing schools, building new factories, they are saying, no, let's just give them social welfare. That is the mentality of the South African government. And now they're saying that they're going to give welfare for everybody, the so-called basic income grant. So even Johann Rupert will be getting 4,000 rands a month from the government in order for him to have basic income. You know, this is a joke. Isn't that what a basic income grant does? You know, every person gets a piece, something from the state. So billionaires like Cyril Ramaphosa, Patrice Motsepe, Johann Rupert, you know, they will be getting this basic income grant to add to their billions.
If you look at people who have their own personal finances in order, and people who don't have debt, they don't worry so much when the interest rates go up, because they don't owe people money. And there are a few people in this country who are in that position, not all of them rich, but some of them very conscientious. You know, I know poor people who manage their finances way better than rich people who I know who owe more of what they have to the bank than anything else. And I think we're a country that has chalked up, despite having a surplus not so many years ago, when Trevor Manuel was our Minister of Finance and your brother was president, we had a very much more robust economy with a lot of money in the till. And now, of course, we're borrowing and borrowing because, as you quite rightly point out, Mr. Mbeki, that the social welfare grants and now the promise of a basic income grant and all of this free stuff that the government will dispense with and give to us for nothing is unsustainable. We just don't have the means to keep it going. And as it is at this point, you could argue that the very people who say a minimum wage is necessary are happy to give people the pittance that is 350 rand a month and expect them to live on it. And they don't realize that they are speaking with a forked tongue.
Well, you know, I worked for COSATU for nearly 3 years in the early 90s. COSATU was opposed to a legislated minimum wage. And one day I was reading a newspaper and suddenly I see COSATU saying, oh no, we must have a minimum wage. So I asked myself, what happened between when I was in COSATU and they were against the minimum wage being fixed by the government? And they had good arguments for it. The argument they had against a government fixed minimum wage was that it undermines the unions to be able to negotiate with the employers and that it will weaken the trade unions. Now the trade unions have weakened themselves by hanging on to the tailcoats of the ANC. Now they want a minimum wage. But it's their own fault.
You know, I saw such a funny thing yesterday. I saw someone saying the ANC should just ignore COSATU because no one voted for COSATU, which is right. And of course, they've ruined their own reputation by just going along with the ANC and the SACP when they were a thing. But the other funny comment I saw is Dalimpofu was busy mouthing off about economic policy. And someone came in and said, and I just thought it was such an ironic way to look at it. They said, oh, why don't you shut up? 91% of South Africa doesn't care what you have to say.
This is true.
He has lots to say.
What would you think is going through the mind of the state president at the moment? What do you think he is considering as his options? Because you mentioned earlier that there's no one really in the ANC who will get rid of him now because most of the factions are outside of the tent as opposed to being in the ANC. At this point, people who don't like the ANC are very firmly in MK or EFF, you would think. There's still obviously some disquiet corners of the ANC. But if you were him at the moment, you almost have, I mean, you do have a 40% mandate from the people of South Africa. And in the ANC, for the first time in a long time, you've got a little tidier of a house to deal with. What would you do if you were him? How do you assert yourself now? Not that he's ever done this before, but if let's say there's a new Cyril Ramaphosa that emerges like a butterfly from the cocoon,
new and improved.
What are the, I can't wait. What are the options? What are the options he has here?
Well, as you point out, you know, the Cyril is in a strong position where in real terms, most of the detractors inside the ANC have left. They left with Julius Malema. They left with Jacob Zuma. So he has no opposition inside. The alliance partners like COSATU and the Communist Party really are very weak. They are just lobbies inside the ANC. They are not even factions. They're just lobby groups inside the ANC. So he doesn't have to pay attention to them. So if my advice to Mr. Ramaphosa is, given that he has so much latitude, he should talk to the serious people in the country. And not just in the other political parties, but in other sections of the South African community, to business, to the churches, to the football clubs. These are very influential people. I mean, you know, the chairman of Orlando Pirates is an important person in this country. I was going to say the chairman of Sundowns, but I changed my mind about that.
He's already related to that one.
So these are the people you should talk to and say, guys, what is the best solution given the situation we're in? And I'm sure they will help him come up with a workable solution. We have lots and lots of talented South Africans out there who are very patriotic and who are willing to make the country work and are very constructive in their mindset instead of being doomsayers. And they will help him to come up with a solution.
So the
advantage of that is that he doesn't have to decide himself, which he doesn't like doing.
So. He doesn't like doing that anyway.
No, you could see the... You could see the relief on his face on Sunday night when he was at the IEC that, you know, he's not totally responsible anymore. Like now he's going to have to defer to others, which is his natural way. I mean, that's how he was when he was in the trade unions. That's how he was during CODESA. That's actually where the best version of Cyril comes out. When you give him all the responsibility, it's a disaster.
Well, so voting is not the only way that we as citizens participate in the way that our country moves forward. So what next In your view, Mr. Mbeki, what is the next thing that we as citizens outside of the National Assembly need to participate and be active to make sure that the next 5 years is not another train wreck as the last 5 years were?
Well, we have to do what we do best, which is to be activists, either activists in business, but we have to start speaking out. You say, one of my criticism of the business community in South Africa, and, you know, Cliff Central is part of the business community, is that the business community is not outspoken. It's not out there saying what needs to be said and contributing constructive ideas. Instead, it waits for a crisis to happen, like the railways collapsing. Then it runs to the government and say, "Here's the money. We'll fix the railways." But the railways are collapsing not because of lack of money, but because of poor management, which they should have pointed out at the beginning of the problem, not just running with bags of money and say, "We have bags of money and with this the money, throw money at the problem." So I think one of our big culprit, the biggest culprit in this country, is our business community, which is not very proactive politically. In America, you have huge lobby groups which are on the government's case all the time, day and night, and they threaten it. And if a senator doesn't do what they want, they lobby against him in his constituency. So that's the other thing we have to do, is we have to insist that constituencies be introduced in this country, so that members of parliament, or at least half of members of parliament, are elected on constituencies, because that then gives us leverage as citizens to go to their constituencies to say, "Look, this guy is not doing his or her job. We get him unelected next time there is an election." At the moment, we don't have such leverage over the politicians because of this proportional 100% proportional representation system. So these are all the things that we now have to put our foot down as citizens and make sure they are implemented. For example, this parliament passed the so-called independence. Where are these independents? They spent huge amount of our taxpayers' money debating about amending the electoral law, coming up with this independence, there will be independence, yeah. What have you? Where are these independents? I haven't seen any one of them.
I think that's such a valid point. And, you know, Pumi and I are hardly shy to criticize business when they don't criticize government. And they should hold government to account because business operates better when government operates better. And normally that just means leaving business alone. But we have a very craven business community. You seem to be desperate to please the ANC more of the time than they are to criticize them. And I think it's valid to bring that up. I mean, Gray here says, "Oh, blaming business." We're not blaming business. What we're saying is that business should play a more active role. Remember Pumi's question to Mr. Mbeki was, how do we participate more meaningfully as citizens and as organizations? And that's the question that he was answering. The other thing is that I do believe that there are some areas that we don't have to pay attention to noise-wise anymore. I think if this election proved anything, it's that wearing the keffiyeh and making a big noise about Palestine won't help your votes or your bottom line. There are left-wing white people in this country who had big hopes for Raisi Mzansi. That all fell to pieces. I think what we've got is pretty much the same population dynamics that we had 10 years ago and that we had 20 years ago. People still vote more or less along those lines. They're just more options. And that indicates that we're maturing as a democracy. So overall, I'm feeling very optimistic. Would you two agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's a good thing the ANC lost its dominance It's good for South Africa. It's good for democracy. Ironically, it's good for the ANC. Interestingly enough, Kgalema Motlanthe said many years ago that it will be good for the ANC to lose power. Well, I hope he's now drinking champagne with he is because now the ANC will improve itself.
There was another former president who said that they'll be in power until Jesus comes, and that didn't happen.
Jesus, that one.
He was one of the devils who sped it to an early grave, you could say. But I don't see the ANC growing going forward. I think no matter what they do now, they are on their way downhill. It's very unlikely they'll be able to arrest this decline. I see the same thing for the EFF. I do see MK possibly, if they can actually do things and if they can grow their base and they can have articulate policies, I do see them growing. The DA has to be congratulated on holding its ground. You know, people said they were going to lose a lot of support in this election. They didn't. It turns out that they actually grew based on 2019 numbers. And those little parties, we've got to keep an eye on them because people like Gate and McKenzie have made an impact.
No, absolutely. You know, but the little parties have to. You see, the too much of the little parties has been moralizing against the ANC.
Yes.
They have to start working on building constituencies. One of the biggest constituencies which votes for the ANC, by the way, are the rural population in the former homelands. Now, are these little parties talking to that population? And are they doing anything about the welfare of the people in that, improving the well-being of the people in those communities? So there's lots and lots of things to do. But personally, I'm optimistic about South Africa.
I am excited. I'm excited about political developments because I do think that one of the things with the ANC losing so much ground is that other parties now have to start talking about other things. They now just can't talk about anti-ANC stuff. They don't have to just point out what the ANC is doing wrong. They now have to talk about themselves and what they propose and what they're going to do much more than they talk about we hate them and we've got to get them to have less power, less than 50% or whatever it is. You know, and I think in the next 5 years, that's what we're going to see more of. I hope. I hope we see more of that. I hope we see more people doing more things. And look, we also, what does Wayne Sussman call it? A rural firewall is what the ANC has. So if you see how they performed in Limpopo, if you see how they performed in the Eastern Cape, that is definitely what they have. But we also have a rapidly urbanizing country. And so in the urban areas, you know, are they still going to be as relevant in the urban areas as they are in rural areas? That again is why we're going to see more and more of a decline and maybe more of those smaller parties who do appeal to urban constituencies, urban youth in particular, maybe we'll see them grow as well.
Listen,
but whatever it is, it's going to be fun.
We can stop talking about the youth. They didn't even pitch up for this election. We've had this conversation.
They're going to be grown up next time.
Yeah, well, they must get there quickly because they were completely absent in this election. But one of the things I hope for is to hear more from you, Mr. Mbeki. So thank you very much for joining us this morning. I appreciate your insights as always, and especially on an occasion where we can talk about so much new information. It's lovely to have your thoughts on what we're going to be heading towards. Thank you.
Thanks for having me. It's been great fun.
It's wonderful waking up to a conversation with you, Mr. Mbeki.
Thank you. Very good.
Bye.
That is our burning platform for this morning, everybody. We will be back next Thursday with more, and we're going to be looking into all of the machinations that will no doubt occur during the course of the next week. If the parties are quiet, it means they're doing things. If they're making
noise, do you think we're going to see more prosecutions?
Well, we'll get to that in a second, but if the parties are making a noise, you can take it for granted that they're being ignored, that no one is talking to them, that they basically just, you know, carry on without them. They're the children in the room. So the more noisy they are in the next week, the less you have to pay attention to them in the long run. watch that. And I see Zizi Kodwa talking about what you just asked for me. Zizi Kodwa is in the firing line. No, the charges have been brought.
Lucy Viewe in the dock. Zizi Kodwa in the dock. Tabo Mbete in the dock.
We may get our wish answered, our dream, that the NPA will actually do something at some point. It could be happening under our very noses.
Orange overalls come loading.
Bring it on. All right, that's it. We got time for this morning. We will see you next week. Cheers, everybody. Bye-bye.